It's Quizzicast time! We're all professionals here. Professional admin, professional developer, professional disaster, pros the lot of us. So it's time we discuss a professional manga about a professional hitman's professional slice of life. On That Time, I started a podcast to read trash manga with my friends, and actually most of them were trash, but some of them weren't. AKA, the Trash Manga Friends Podcast Chapter 106! Before you discard me, I shall have my trash manga with you. And don't forget, use the code THEWOLFAMONGUS to go buy your tie-in eye drops only while stocks last. You know what the show is. It's the show with three people, two volumes, one trash manga, you know? Protecting what's good, roughing up what's bad, and assassinating what's trash. I am your forever host, the Sean and the Hare, joined by the Mike who cried wolf and the Phil that laid the golden eggs. How are you both?
I'm not a huge fan of my characterization in your intro there. That I feel attacked, I'll be honest.
Well, I called you a professional developer, right?
You know what? Sure, that's the one I took away from that. God, it really says something that of the three that you mentioned, I knew exactly which one I was meant to be.
Yeah. Good.
It's rude is what that is.
Dare
I say, unprofessional.
Now, all I'm saying is I wrote that after your recent ESA speedrun, and I stand by my statement.
Yeah.
That was
It was a run of all time, yeah.
I call it a beautiful disaster, and I stand by that. It was impressive that you pretty much got it over the line,
I did.
Considering everything else went wrong.
Everything went wrong, partly because the game was just mean to me, partly because I was nervous, partly because there were some weird janky hardware issues at play. But I ended the run. I finished it. It worked. Yay, I did the thing.
Only just overestimate as well, impressively.
Yeah, it was actually less overestimate, despite the fact I did more things because of, like, donation incentives. It was less overestimate than my previous live event was, which I don't know what happened on that one. Apparently, it was just really fucking slow.
Oh, I haven't seen the UKSG run. How did that go really badly or something?
No,
I
not really.
Backup save.
I would actually say I did have to use a backup save, and I would say it actually went, like, better apart from that. It just... I don't know, it was just slower, I guess. I don't know.
What I'll say, kids, if you want to check out Mike Inscription Run, check out his recent PB, where he knocked a minute off his time, pretty much.
Yeah, let's remember my successes and not my bitter failures.
I don't know, because this was the run straight after you watched the world record, and were like, maybe I should do these strats. And he's like, yeah.
Maybe I should do it like the world record holder does it. Oh, look, it's faster.
Oh, man. Maybe you should take that advice for Sunshine, eh? Super Mario Sunshine, which is...
I don't think that's going to help in any way.
Go fuck yourself.
I mean, no.
I'm playing Super Mario Sunshine on stream at the time of recording, and
yes.
it hurts.
He is playing what I regard as one of the best games of all time, at least that I've played. And Mike is... pain.
Trust me, it hurts me at least as much as it hurts you.
Doubt.
I am really bad at platformers, so much so that I've pretty much avoided the entire
How you've played action adventure games for decades and then you've come into Mario and you can't jump, I don't know, but you
I
know.
I don't know, like, my brain works differently to other people. I've learned this over the years. Evidently. Not better. God, no, not better, but differently.
Would you say professionally?
Absolutely not.
Oh, well, that makes this segue awkward. So, are we ready then to dive into our spring anime tie-in series?
I am once again, in the true professional manner, surprised to hear that this is a tie-in episode.
Well.
I got nothing at this point.
There's nothing we can do, Phil. So... Just carry
if
on.
A, like a list of like what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Don't be insane.
Okay, I don't read that, and if I did,
evidently.
I don't.
This
I
is
don't
why you're not
that.
The professional admin.
And if I did, I don't remember it. And if I did remember it, I would forget it. So
okay. So this time around, we have been covering The Fable, an action comedy manga. Asterisk, very bad. Tricky to define this one to a genre, but that's what I'm going with. It ran from November 2014 to November 2019 for 22 volumes total. Written and drawn by Katsuhisa Minami, who has done all of the related works to The Fable, as well as another series called Naniwa Tomoare, which ran for about 13 years and nearly 60 volumes total. This is licensed. You can pick it up via Kodansha. All 22 volumes are available digitally. And the first physical omnibus will be out next month in April. But again, that's an omnibus. So it'll be, I believe it's volumes 1 and 2 combined. So if you're a stick in the mud like me who doesn't like omnibuses, wah, wah. And there is, as alluded to, an anime that will start airing on April 7th by Tezuka Productions. And you will be able to stream this over on Disney Plus. It's one of their anime series. There is also a sequel manga called The Fable, The Second Contact, which ran from July 2021 to July 2023 for 9 volumes. 2 live-action films, one in 2019 and then a sequel in 2021, both of which you can stream over on Netflix. It sold over 20 million units and was the winner of the 41st Kodansha Manga Award in the general category in 2017. So what is that? This manga is a fable of its own. So tell us, Phil, what is The Fable all about?
The Fable is a renowned hitman assassin who, after the latest job, their boss says, "We've been killing too many people recently. You're going to have to take a year off, lay low, just live a normal life." And as such, The Fable and his getaway driver are sent off to a town in somewhere Japan.
Osaka.
Thank you. Where they are being housed by a local Yakuza family and try to just live normal lives for a year.
I must admit, I was reading chapter one, having not read this before, and like went through the moment of it and like saw the action scene at the start and then how it was progressing. And then we get to the end of it where it's like a genius hitman Fable moves to Osaka to live a normal life. And all I could think of is like the Simpsons meme where you can see the exact moment Ralph Wiggum's heart breaks, but it's the exact moment Mike goes, "Oh God, it's a slice of life."
Well, you're not wrong about that. I have a much more succinct description, which is it's where the house husband, but they took out the funny.
There are, I have in my notes, a lot of comparisons to Where the House Husband, so yeah, that'll...
I mean, yes, I understand that comparison in a way. Obviously, Where the House Husband, he's former Yakuza, whereas this, he's current professional hitman.
Yeah.
I would say the difference here is this isn't specifically trying to be a comedy, whereas Where the House Husband is.
I don't know, it was apparently listed as comedy in the genre list we were given.
It lists about five things in the genre, like Wikipedia, Mangadex, and Mal, I think all have different descriptions of what they count this as genre-wise. So I'm like, I don't really know where to go with this, because it's kind of a jack-of-all-trades.
I would call it like a...
Slice of life is the easiest way to say it, probably.
An extent, yeah, it is kind of, I would say, drama. Slice of life drama, maybe.
I don't think it's got enough drama to be drama. That's the thing.
At least not in what we've read. First two volumes, I would agree with that. It's not particularly dramery. There is a little bit, but not much.
Definitely
through
slice
the whole
of life.
Series, definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely. Yeah. I mean, it lays that out pretty much in chapter one, where like you're going to retire and you're just going to try and live normal lives. And I'm like, yeah, Michael will love it.
That is his.
Hey, I always say that if you're going to do slice of life, at least give it some kind of like hook to it. And this does have a hook.
Yeah, you can't say this doesn't have a gimmick.
No,
that is true.
It certainly does.
And coming off SSS tier, this is full of creative ideas and originality.
Like, realistically, if I was going to like a slice of life, it would be this one.
I like the way that's phrased.
So do I.
It was carefully phrased, yes.
Oh, it's like he did it on purpose.
That's crazy, man. You can't. You're a professional disaster. You couldn't possibly
just
nail
gonna
such.
Slowly something. Drink my coffee and wait for my moment. Because there's one thing I want to say about this series.
Go ahead.
Are you waiting for one of us to walk into it or something?
No, nothing fucking happened. For like the longest time. Okay, something happens in chapter one.
I would argue it's slow paced.
Uh-huh.
But yes. I wouldn't say nothing happens.
Like, I would say nothing happens until chapter 11, 12-ish, I think. There's like one scene, there might be later than that. There's one scene where there's like the sort of the big climax of this guy being like, no, you are this guy, and like gets him to...
I mean, that's like the end of volume two. That's like
yeah, it's, like, it's 18, nearer the end
17,
than the
18. I would say it's like there's two arcs in what we've read, I would say. There's the first one, which is about the first half of volume one, maybe the first two thirds of volume one, which is essentially setting up the premise and then moving into this new town. And then kind of the rest of what we read, so the back half of volume one and then most of volume two, is essentially the conflict between the lead character who they had. So we don't know his real name. His fake name he's given is Sato Akira, but I'm just going to say Fable because it's easier. And essentially his rivalry with the second in command of the Yakuza, who I believe is Ebihara Satoshi. I'll just call him Ebihara. But it's basically more about that one because Ebihara, for want of a better word, is threatened by this guy. And
he doesn't trust them, basically.
Yeah, he... And it's not like they do anything to like earn distrust or anything like that. But yeah, he's very uncomfortable with this situation. And
basically, the whole point is the reason they're putting them up is because the organization Fable and...
Fable has done a lot of work for them in the past, and now they're repaying the favor.
It's not necessarily Fable himself, but the organization he works for.
I mean, they do talk specifically about how he assassinated one gang of 10 people that was opposing them. So.
Oh yeah, this man's like a Terminator. He will just like walk in a room and be the only one that walks out.
The genius of the hitman profession.
He's a Terminator, but also when they're like, oh, he's only killed like 70 people. I'm like, okay. They're keeping that over all time.
Oh, okay.
So it was like, about 6 people this year, I think.
Yeah, they're keeping it relatively grounded is the wrong word for, you know, an assassin.
Somewhat realistic.
But yeah, it's not like he's Kirito. So
yeah, he's not just like shanking people left and right and somehow getting away with it.
Yeah.
No.
And I should, like, his main strength, as well as being, you know, a god-tier assassin who can get pretty much anyone dead in 6 seconds, give or take.
Yep.
But also, the other main strength we've shown with him is how his ability... So he has the little mental tick of he does it, of, like, he's pushing a switch on his head. But basically, it's his ability to kind of... I put it as, like, separate everything in that he can do his assassin stuff and then go back to normal life and not really be burdened by it. Not have, like, the guilt or anything.
Compartmentalization.
That's the phrase, yes.
Yeah, he even says at one point that he doesn't kill for fun, it's just a job. Like, he gets no real enjoyment out of it.
He's really job-orientated sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, they're like,
he just doesn't care.
You're going to take a break, and he's like, but when's my next job? And like,
yeah, this, like, really reminds me of, I think it's called Iceman. It was, like, a movie based on real story of this guy who, he was a murderer. Like, he was actually a serial killer. And then he was good at what he did. This is in like the 70s, where standards were lower, of course. And he was really good at what he did, so good that he got a job doing hits for the mafia. And so, and then when it got to a point where they're like, right, you need to stop killing people, you need to cool down for a bit, somewhat like this. But the difference is there, he's like, no, I'm actually a serial killer, I need to kill people. And that's how the whole thing unravels, because like the mafia tells him to stop and he just can't handle it. It kind of has that vibe, except it doesn't have, like, the whole unraveling part. He really is okay just putting it away for a year.
He does also... This is also something that very specifically comes up towards the end, where Ebihara's like, you're just like a serial killer. And he's
exactly.
No, I am not a serial killer. I do not do this for fun. This is very specifically work.
I mean, he's clearly a psychopath. Like, he actually... Like, in the actual medical sense, like, he just has no empathy or... He has, like, no attachment or anything like that. He just does things because it is the most convenient thing for him.
I wouldn't say he doesn't have attachment or empathy. Like, I'm not going to say he's the most emotive guy out there. Like, absolutely not. Like, we can see his awkwardness with social stuff, with, like, the things he says to people, like, when he's meeting them for the first time. And they're like, oh, okay, I'll show you to it. He's like, oh, by the way, you've got nose hair sticking out of there. Just, you probably think that happened.
Yes.
Yeah, but at the same time, I get the vibe where if he got the... If he was told to kill his de facto sister for this section of the story.
His getaway driver.
Yeah, if he was told to kill her, he probably would, pretty dispassionately. Like, I don't think he'd be like, no, that's where I draw the line.
I don't think he'd do it immediately. I think
he might at least ask why.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the very least, like, I think he would.
Need, like, a massive justification.
Well, that's the other, because, like, so she is the lead like, again, we don't have a real name, Sato Yoko, because they are given fake brother-sister names for this one. But we don't learn a huge amount about her. Like, we know she's been his driver for a while, but there's still clearly an awkwardness to their relationship. Mm-hmm. She gives a backstory at some point that her house burned down and her parents died, but obviously we don't, bear in mind what their profession is, we don't know if that's for real, but that's the story she gives at least.
Yeah, the story she gives is like, this: the burning down the house happened, she was taken in by the mob, and then suddenly a year ago, she was his driver. And it's like, you missed a few details. It's like, we don't really know what's
with their profession.
sure. But what I'm saying is, because of that, we don't really know if that's on the up and up. Yeah. We have no reason to believe it's not, but we have no reason to believe it is either. So, yeah. Like, there's clearly something going on there.
That's it. For me, it's just like, because they're still, they're not buddy-buddy, per se, these two. Like, they're not at each other's throats or anything like that. There's no, like, cliche anime sibling rivalry nonsense here.
Yeah. But this is not the manga that does the shouting spirit thing. It's
a very
quiet
manga. They
are,
in many ways, colleagues.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, this is a much more quiet and subtle manga. Problem is, that makes it come off kind of boring sometimes. Because
it is slice of life, so it would be weird if it got bombastic. Like, it can do bombastic, the chapter towards the end. But otherwise, yeah.
Like, and yeah, that's fine. And yes, obviously, I don't like slice of life. So it's an uphill battle to begin with me.
Whoa.
I know.
You said in the Welcome to the NHK episode, it was your favorite.
Yeah, I know. Fucking. what are you talking about? That was in a different universe.
Oh, yeah, we've never done that.
We've never done the NHK. Yeah, that was it.
we just had an off week. We decided to have a break.
And because we never do that, some sort of universal collision thing happened. I don't know what happened there. But, obviously I don't like Slice of Life, so it's an uphill battle. But even with that, it's like, there are so many chapters where something is going on the page, but I feel like there's no actual story movement whatsoever. Like, there's an entire chapter devoted to them getting a pet, and they end up with two pets.
I mean, yeah, they each bought a pet.
One bought a hamster and one bought a bird, which is fine for a plot point. It's just, I don't know, they just fail to make it, it's devoid of interest. They fail to make it interesting at all.
There are a couple of things we get, because obviously that chapter is also intermixed with at that point in the story, he's being harassed by essentially a mook of the Yakuza and the minions he's bringing along. But yeah, because there's also a bit where they're like, I have to get a pet. Okay, what am I going to get? And then he sees a parrot, and somehow this reminds him of a Nighthawk, which...
His signature
gun. His signature gun.
Yes. His partner, he says.
They're both birds. It's about where that similarity ends.
I mean, like, by that logic, why not just buy yourself, like, an eagle.
I don't think you can buy eagles as pets.
I reckon
Phil, he has 50 million yen. He can buy whatever the fuck he wants. This is Japan, where you can own, and this will give away a VTuber I watch, a fucking monkey. So...
How much is 50 million yen?
A lot.
Yeah.
Put it like this, the parrot costs 190,000, and I think the lady's like, that's expensive. I'm like, what? What?
I mean,
if you were a normal person, yes. If you're these two, it doesn't really strike me as a big amount of money.
About $250,000, Mike.
Yeah.
You could get a bird of prey for that money quite easily.
You could probably
pay $10,000 in dollars and get hawk, eagle, insert bird here. Which, again, I suppose it also, that wouldn't help if you're trying to be damn low.
When you're trying to, yeah, lay low. It's here is our neighbour. They have a hawk.
And the point is, like, it would be weird, but it wouldn't be like, I don't know. Also, again, compared to, yes, a parrot.
Yeah, sure. Although, I would argue that a parrot, famous for their voice mimicry skills, is not really the thing you want to have if you're trying to be a Yakuza on the down low.
That is fair.
I mean, they're not trying to be a Yakuza on the down low.
They would never do anything like that.
They're not exactly clever at hiding their Yakuza-ness. That parrot is going to pick up something, and it's going to repeat it ad nauseum, and it's going to throw the whole thing off.
Jackal.
Jackal. Is it Jackal?
Jackal. Hitman is obsessed with a comedian called Jackal.
Apparently.
He's apparently not a very great comedian.
That is...
I mean, hard to say, really. I mean,
yes, we don't really see much, but basically, we're shown he fucking loves Jackal.
It is.
Whereas everyone
actually,
else, just like, he's kind of third rate.
That's actually another sign of psychopathy.
I would call him a savant.
No, okay, I'm not going to say, oh man, I like this niche comedian, therefore I'm a psychopath.
No, it's less that it's niche, more that the fact that he's the only one who likes it
the
and everyone
obsession.
Else. Is, yeah, it's like.
It's an obsession, sure, but I don't think being a fanboy of something is fucking psychopathy.
But it's like the fact that no one else likes it implies that it's not very good. Therefore, it implies that he's reading something into it that most people don't understand, and that it's in itself is a signifier of psychopathy.
I feel the psychopathy thing with that would be more along the lines of that is very much his release is the wrong word, but the only time you really see him outside of his usual like dour down to earth expression is when Jackal has done something or other, at which point he's laughing, he's animated before going back to being down to earth again. So.
Yeah, I in my mind he's clearly a psychopath, and that's actually
he kills people, so you know.
Psychopaths don't all kill people. Psychopathy is actually a
okay. Let me make that clear. Psychopaths don't all kill people, but I would argue most of the people who kill people are in some way a psychopath.
No, they're just weird.
So I would call him a
savant. That's a medical diagnosis.
Phil,
Phil.
Mike, are you announcing something here? No, I'm not a psychopath. No. Me? Never. I'm just weird.
No, you know I'm not a psychopath because of how fucking angry I get shit.
Like, famously, psychotic people never get angry.
No, they don't. They lack emotions. That's the thing. Psychopaths, they don't actually have emotions. They can mimic emotions. Because they learn to do it over time, because they realize in order to fit in, they have to be able to show emotion. But the reality of the situation is they don't actually feel anything.
Are you sure you're not thinking of sociopaths?
No, sociopaths are different. Sociopaths are people who do have the emotions, but they are more than willing to manipulate those around them to get to accomplish their goals. They have emotions, they just don't care. Whereas psychopaths don't have emotions, and they use the knowledge that they gained over life to be able to interact. That's why I'm saying not all psychopaths kill people. In fact, most murderers are sociopaths, not psychopaths.
I will say at this point, part of me is going like, he's wrong. And then I'm like, Sean, he's a fucking psychology bachelor.
I was about to say, this is my
This is his wheelhouse, Sean. Yeah. Shut up, Sean.
This is the part where like you get a comment being like, no, he's actually wrong. He's a moron. Like, oh, fuck. You know, this is what I'm saying. Like, maybe I'm a sociopath. I'm convincing you.
I'm pretty sure there's times where we've all actually been wrong, so it's fine.
I feel like I am actually, and I'm wrong 100% of the time. actually, the answer is -2. Ah, fuck.
Well, I mean, this is an award-winning, massively successful series, Mike. So clearly, actually, you're wrong. It's good.
Oh yeah, that's what it. That's the standard, isn't it? If it's award-winning, it's good. What was the episode? Food Wars.
Zoshinoko, I believe.
No, which is good.
Food Wars is the one that was massively.
I want to say Blue Lock is the one where you guys went off. I think it was Blue Lock where I poorly said my argument and you kids ran with that.
Yeah.
Good old Blue Lock.
Bad old Blue Lock.
I was about to say I'd read Blue Lock over this, but no shit, I like Blue Lock.
I'd rather read something I like over something I don't. Well, that's a take, I guess.
I didn't say I don't like this. We haven't gotten to my conclusion yet, buddy.
No, I haven't gotten to mine either.
I mean, you can't hate this. It doesn't have text bloat. There are quite a lot of panels and pages and bit scenes where it just plays out with next to no text.
Hey, I will gladly say there is actually a lot about this I do like. Like, a lot about it. Like, I do like that they actually try to do something with the slice of life format. As you just said, I like the fact that there's no text bloat. It really is just that they commit to the slice of life bit where it is just people living a life and having normal-ass conversations. Well, normal for the context. And, like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff I do like. I think this is made very, very well in that those regards. It's just... It just drags so much.
It's slow, for sure.
It, it, I mean, is, It is definitely a slow burn.
Like, it's, I mean, it's like most apparent for me with, like, because there's another female character who I believe it's Misaki who,
I know who you mean. The girl you see maybe twice.
The girl who we learn a little bit about because she lives nearby, and Ebihara has this weird, like, affection from afar thing for her, like wanting to protect her, even though he's never really met her, whatever. But that's psychopathy. This is where Mike goes, no, no, it's not. The point is, like, she's a character who's there, and she's being built up slowly in the background, but that's not come to fruition at any point in these two volumes. It's more just a couple of mentions of, like, oh, here she is, and then she's gone again.
So I think we see her three times, I'm going to say.
I want to say it's he sees her randomly at her flat.
Taking out the trash or something.
She offers him a tissue for his bloody nose after he's been fighting the kickboxer. Yep. And then we see her right at the end when he and Ebihara are bonding.
And she's jogging or something, yes.
Yeah.
And that's when you learn a little bit about her, where Ebihara's like, oh, she wants to open a flower shop or something.
Yeah, the end of Volume 2 is setting up what presumably the next bits are going to be, which is like more introducing her, and then also he talks about some person, his brother, in inverted quotes, who knows if that's for real. But
I think that's more like the Yakuza brother.
That's the thing, yeah. I could
like
also
he's part of the
part of their family. But yeah, so that's but that's clearly where it's going to go next in Volume 3. So
yeah, in the something happens at the beginning of Volume 1, something happens near the end of Volume 2, and there's a whole bunch of who the fuck cares in the middle. And part of that who the fuck
cares. Are you telling me you didn't like seeing the Mook guy clearly jerking off and multiple people going, why does your car smell like squid?
I wasn't crazy fond of that, no, because it was a joke that, joke, big air quotes, joke, which...
I mean, that is a joke, yes.
It happens, it just wasn't funny. It's like, that happens once, and you're like, no, I see what happened there, I get it. I see you, manga, I get you. And then it proceeds to happen twice more. It's like, oh, okay. The joke is, the guy's jerking off in his car while watching security footage of this woman.
Of the lead female.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they bugged the apartment, essentially.
Yes.
Then yeah. That's it.
Oh, that's another bit about Fable I forgot about. Sorry, he has three distinct character things. Whoops. So his other one is that he has a kind of sixth sense of the auras of people. So like, never-do-wells, what kind of criminal they are, and like situational awareness of being like, there's one point where the guy says, okay, so shoot the security camera, and he shoots what appears to be a random point in the room, and then we discover later, instead of shooting the obvious one, he shot the hidden one in the wall. So like, he has that kind of... That's not psychopathy, Mike!
No, the sixth sense is.
He's like a good read of character to know sort of like what people's intentions are, I think. And then, yeah, he has a lot of situational awareness to know, but I think probably just because of the line of work he is in, professional hitman, he knows that's where the security cameras are. They're going to put them here, kind of thing. Obviously, sort of in this particular instance, it does come across a bit more sixth sensey because it is very much, well, clearly there's one there and he has no real reason to know that.
It's like it comes up several times because there's several times where he just looks directly into the camera. Yeah. Or I think when he's meeting the Yakuza people for the first time, and this is less sixth sense and more situational awareness of being like, yeah, you've got a gun and it's this gun.
Yeah.
And then it's like, ah, but how would you kill the other guy? And like, well, with his gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was concealing a gun at the time. So like,
I will say, like, because I know Yoko, the female character, says a few times, like, oh my God, you can't bring guns. And I'm like, no, yes, bring a gun. Like, I get you're moving this life behind, but why the fuck would you not have a gun?
Well, I think
been a hitman.
I think that's the point of, like, he doesn't actually need guns. Obviously, that makes his life easier. But, like, if he's going out to kill someone, he could either do it with his bare hands or a gun he finds on the scene or whatever. Like, he doesn't actually need them because he's that good.
Yeah. So, it's just, he seems shocked sometimes. Like, why would you bring a gun? I'm like, because he's not an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to beat the Yakuza. Maybe have a gun.
You're going to be the Yakuza, and also, you know, you've killed 70 people. What if one of them takes up his umbrage?
Yeah. I mean, with the Sixth Sense thing, there is actually one scene which really does exemplify this, where I might be confusing a couple of scenes here, but there's a part where, like, he's seeing some car vandals in a car park they're parked in.
Yeah.
And
it's like chapter 2 or something.
Yeah, and then someone asks him, he says, like, oh, those are vandals, and like, oh, how do you know? Ah, you wouldn't get it. Like, I can't explain it. I just know. And it's stuff like that you see quite a lot. Like, it's just a lot of, I'm so good at what I do, I can't explain it, I just know. So there's a lot of stuff like that in there as well.
I mean, it's probably quite difficult to show in a still format in, like, manga. But
sure.
That is kind of the thing a lot of people say, no, you can actually tell these kinds of people apart. They, you know, they walk around like car parks a certain way. They're looking at things in a particular way. They're trying not to draw attention in a certain way and stuff like that.
He does the Breaking Bad thing where he looks at the evidence in front of him and he's like, nah, you idiots, don't go for that car, go for this one. There's, that one's worth like 50 million yen or something.
So I think that's the more sixth sense part of that, is where he's like, no, that car there clearly has like all this expensive stuff in it or something.
Yeah, and then they go for the wrong one. He's just like, amateurs.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I get that. There's also another scene where he's fighting some random Muay Thai fighter who the other guy sends up. It turns out the other guy sent after him.
He's a kickboxer, Mike.
It's a Muay Thai in the version I was reading. But anyway,
I think it was a joke in that they don't really know what he does.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure he says, no, I'm a kickboxer. And he's like, yeah, it's Muay Thai. And like, no.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I've got it the wrong way around. The point is more like they always get him wrong. He's like, no, I'm this.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever. They send this guy after him to like beat him up. This is the scene where he ends up getting a bloody nose. And he does the Sherlock Holmes, Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes bit where he's just like talking his way through the fight in his mind before the actual fight happens. And so it's like, yes, this is going to happen. So I'll do this and then this. And then this, and then I'll pretend to be hurt, and then do this. And I'll pretend to be hurt again. He pretends to be hurt like four times in that fight.
Yeah, it's him pretending to lose the fight while also controlling it.
Yeah. And basically not taking any serious damage. He ends up with a bloody nose, but that's about it.
Yeah, but and that was intentional as well.
Yeah, he intentionally diverts.
He takes that hit, so the guy like wrecks his knuckles on him, basically.
Yeah, because he like headbutts him in the fist.
Yeah, and the point is, it makes it look like he's taken a lot more of a beating than he actually has.
Yeah.
Because basically all the other hits, he sort of like turns with the hits, or he sort of adjusts his body position so like the leg just slides down him rather than just digging in or something.
Yeah, that's it. In like in all of the combat scenes in this, you'll see that he, or like conflict scenes in this, he is in essentially complete control. There's one later on where he's running away from him and he's essentially just physically gaslighting, I guess, the guy by just like running a bit and then being like, oh no, I'm out of energy. Ah, oh, there he is, run away again. And oh, yeah, I should pretend to be like out of.
Yeah, he's like, okay, I'm supposed to be a normal person. No, I'm so terribly winded.
He fights without honor.
And then climbs off a bridge and jumps down. And that one did throw me a bit where he's like, oh my god, he must have jumped straight off. And I'm like, dude, you can see the ledge is right there.
And then like they do something like, oh yeah, check the around the bottom of the bridge to make sure he didn't fall there and die or something. Like, what the fuck? You can see him right there.
And then obviously the final fight at the end where he's fighting the former boxer, wrestler, I think it was.
I think you're right,
wrestler. But again, he's in essentially complete control of that fight from the beginning. So
Well, in that particular case as well, that's very specific because Ebihara has said, no, I want to see proof you are.
Oh,
fable.
Absolutely sure. But the point is, like, he's never in, at least within combat and conflict, he's never in any danger at any point in these two moments.
No, but it's more just there's that subtle difference where, compared to like when he's fighting the kickboxer, Muay Thai, whatever he does.
The random move that shows up far too often.
whereas in that fight, he's trying to just limit the damage he's taken. In this fight at the end, it's very much, no, show me what you can do.
And then he does.
And also doesn't kill the guy, like very explicitly says, like, no, I wasn't brought here to kill, so I'm
not entirely sure what he does do to that guy.
he basically just wins him,
incapacitates him.
Does something to his throat, and he's like, oh, he can't move now.
Yeah, he throat punches him, like,
what the fuck did you do to that man?
Punches him in the throat.
It doesn't, though. He does some weird thing with his hand. Like,
chops him in the throat. I don't know. He jabs the throat, is the point.
Jabs his throat with a knuckle, basically, like, hitting his windpipe, I guess.
while also performing an Olympic high jump over his head as well.
Oh, sure, yeah, I'll give you that one.
It's like, damn, this man's missed his calling. He should be a professional athlete with those kind of ups.
Yeah, even after that then as well, when Ebihara has to be like, no, you must kill, and like, no, I won't, and then takes out Ebihara's henchman, and then, you know, like, socially kind of manipulates is the wrong word, but kind of then socially plays the situation to be like, nah, I'm just want a peaceful life, dude. Just let me be.
The most fucking inept henchman as well, right? It's like,
which one?
The Ebihara's henchman.
Which
one?
The
one with the wrestler, right?
The one who doesn't load his fucking gun.
I mean, people doesn't cock it or whatever. Like, I watched Archer.
Well, okay, yes. Archer's meant to be funny.
No one counts the bullets! No one counts the shots!
To be fair, I think as well, part of it is you do sort of see this a lot, particularly with like Ebihara when he's interacting with the younger people of the Yakuza. He's obviously very old school. He understands how it's all done.
He is a manly man's man. I thought, like, not necessarily in physique, but he's like, he likes his old car. He likes his classic gun, etc. He's very much like old school.
He's very old school. Whereas like all the henchmen we see, all two of them, they're like young and they come across more as like delinquents rather than Yakuza in a way. It's very much like, no, do this, do that. You don't. Clearly don't know how the Yakuza works as far as Ebihara is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of understandable in a way when Kuro, this guy at the end, hasn't loaded his gun. The assumption, I guess, is he's probably not had much use of it. He probably wasn't,
even though they were like, this is the Fable, they were probably like, yeah, but you know, he won't be that great. It'll be fine.
Well, there's also this organization we keep talking about. I think they do drop at some point. There's only like 25 members of it or something. Like, it's a smaller organization.
It is a small Yakuza family, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, bear in mind, this is Osaka. This is Osaka, like, Tokyo. So.
Well, I think as well, this sort of one of the reasons why our two hitmen are basically there is because they have helped this small Yakuza family stay independent, as they put it, rather than getting merged in one of the bigger Yakuza groups.
Oh, my favor, sort of.
I mean, he has, for sure. Yoko.
As I say, bear in mind, Fable is part of an organization. He isn't a freelance hitman as such. He is part of an organization. The organization itself is what gets hired, not necessarily Fable.
That's fair. I just think, if I was going to say there's one character who feels a bit obsolete's the wrong word, but like, Yoko really feels like they haven't done much with her as of yet. She has some ability to do puppy dog eyes, as it were, crocodile tears, I guess, like manipulate people emotionally.
Yeah.
But I doesn't really go into that. And then, and even more annoyingly, they're like, oh, so what do you do? What do you do while you're here? Oh, I just want to find a man and, like, you know, have a romance. And I'm like, okay, going for the most cliche female. Plot
and then attaches to the first creepo that comes her way, the one who's been spying on her. Not that she knows
I mean, not she knows that. I mean, I do get slightly her reasoning behind it, that she's been around fucking Fable for so long that she just wants a guy who is, in her words, weak.
As
weak
also,
and sloppy, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's more down to her preferences, shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
Because she clearly has some weird power dynamic.
Oh, she's a masochist. She's a masochist. Yeah.
Sadist.
Sorry, sadist. You're right. Yeah, fucking hell, Sean.
Basically, she gets this guy drunk and just loves seeing him stumbling around, barely able to stand up. And
literally takes him home at the end and then half strips off to try and like rearranges the room into like an obstacle course style thing. He's just laughing her face off as he gets tangled up in it because he's deliriously drunk.
But desperately wants to get to her.
Do the deed, yeah.
He's saying, let me smash, and also slurring. So,
yes.
So, yeah.
Which I found funny, but again, I like Nagatoro, so you know, there you go.
No, this was actually funny.
I wouldn't go as far as funny, but it was a definite...
Like, you get a chuckle out of you.
It was a definite shift, and it didn't feel like...
I mean, to be fair, I feel that back end worked well because you had that. You had essentially their date, as it were, playing off against the other date, for want of a better word, which is like a Fable and Ebihara. And like there were a couple of nice transitions there where you cut from like one scene to, I think it was like you cut, I can't remember what it was, but it was like you were cutting from like one bowl shaped thing in the one thing to the mook throwing up in the toilet in another bowl shaped thing. So I was like, oh, that's nice. There's some nice transitions and stuff here.
And yeah, I like these scenes because they are the part that happens. The rest of it, nothing happens.
The rest of it is establishing, again, Fable versus this kickboxer and this other guy and just how
but good Fable is. It feels so toothless, doesn't it? Like, the whole thing, it's just like, everything that happens between that first chapter and this scene, the end of Volume 2.
The back half of Volume 2, yeah.
Yeah, it just feels so, like, toothless and pointless. It's like, we're just, like, meandering around, even though the whole thing is... has got the Yakuza family being mysterious in the background and conniving and like, oh, we gotta figure out who this guy is and what he can do and we gotta be careful of him. And it's like, it's just like you cut back to those guys talking about nothing for a while and then you cut back to Fable also doing nothing for a while. It's like, just get on with it.
What, you mean you don't work out nude?
Hey, some people work out nude and that's fine. And frankly, if I was hung like him, I probably would too. Jesus Christ. But this is fine.
Yeah, I mean, you do see a few snippets of that. As he gets the parrot and then starts playing with the parrot and the parrot gets its revenge in my favourite panel, the thing. Just the parrot triumphant with a hair. Which is like, yeah, you trust me, as someone who owned a fucking budgie, and it was like, oh, you want to pick a fight with them? No, don't. They'll win. The bird will win every time.
Yeah. Birds are some vindictive motherfuckers.
Beaks are sharp, is all that I'm saying.
Okay, flashbacks to childhood stuff of like, okay, it's the end of the day. We need to get the bird, like our budgie, back in its cage now. So we get like its ladder, and the budgie's like, yeah, my ladder. I like playing with that. So jumps on the bottom. And then you're in a race to get it in the cage before it climbs up the ladder and goes, oh, what's this finger holding this ladder? Looks tasty.
Mmm, flesh.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that you can find enjoyment in that scene. It's just, for me, it was just yet another of a whole bunch of just nothing. I get it, it's slice of life, and this is a daily activity that people experience in life, so I'm told. But it's just...
I mean, you own pets. Surely at some point one of your cats has gone, you know what would be fun? If I attack him.
Yes, absolutely. But I wouldn't write fiction about that.
This is why you're not the master Junji Ito who has done my manga about his cats.
It's just, like, boring. It's just,
wow, Junji Ito's boring. Wow, you heard it here for.
I've actually never read Junji Ito.
You must have read some Junji Ito. Did you not read the? I can't think what it's.
He won't have read it. He'll know like this hole is made for me.
This hole is my hole.
Yeah, yeah. I know the.
I mean, I'll be fair. I've not read that manga. I just know that.
I mean, it's a one shot. It's like 50 pages.
That's the point. I've not read that. I just know the iconic.
Like, yeah, I know the references of the Spiralverse. I also know that there's the meteor that's alive and wipes out the planet. Like, that's the story. The world dies. Cool. Also, the thing about the people turning into snails or something. It's like, I know a bunch of stuff about it. But yeah, I've never actually read Junji Ito. Not the point. That's actually interesting. This isn't.
That's the point.
That's the point. I mean, Junji Ito is a bad comparison. Let's put it that way. But,
I mean, very different, yes.
you want a bad comparison. Why the fuck is he called Fable?
Yeah, I never got that.
Try and go with it. Oh, he's like a mythical thing.
Yeah,
so
that's
we'll
what
call
I
him Fable. I'm like, that's a shit nickname.
Maybe it works better in Japanese.
Maybe. I just...
The thing that threw me reading this again is at some point later on, they basically change it from just his name to the organization's name. So the idea is they're all
Fable working at Fable Inc.
Is Mr. Fable in today? You know, he's off murdering. Oh.
Where is Mr. Fable in the room right now? Are they in the room with us?
I don't know. He's a hitman. I can't see him.
Oh shit, he's John Cena.
I was going to say, you can see him very specifically.
Yeah, he's not the ninja kind.
Because he's like very, again, part of the whole down to earth feel of this. Because like even when you see him in action, he's just like he just puts like the standard sock with eye holes on his head. He doesn't have anything special or anything.
Like ski mask. Yeah,
he's just a dude who's really good at his job.
Yeah, he's just a dude.
Six seconds is the ideal.
Yeah,
as he says, you heard it here first, ladies.
Oh, fucking marathon man. Thanks. So. Well, finish within 6 seconds, so that makes sense. Yeah, he's just a guy, and that's like the kind
I feel
of
that's
scary
a little
part.
Unfair to him in a way.
It is incredibly unfair because obviously
very much not just a guy.
But the idea trying to put forward
the guy. The Fable.
No, in the manga, he's just Fable. The title, he's The Fable.
My bad, yeah.
The man, the myth, the fable.
The idea is it's meant to be believable that this man can just blend in, and with adjustment period notwithstanding, this guy could just go about life, but he's actually also this super deadly killer, but neither side really affects his mentality of the other. Like, this is like him blending in is just a job to him. There's no emotional attachment to anything involved.
Well, I suppose that is the thing, isn't it? He's very much taking this is part of the job. This is a job. Yeah. I just have to blend in. He's not necessarily.
Well, I think that's how he contextualizes it, because he's very job orientated. So I think by thinking of this as another mission, it's the way he kind of mentally gets around the fact that he's not going to be killing anyone for a year.
It's his way of going, I'm actually not going to be working as such for a year. Not necessarily specifically not killing, beyond the fact that killing is his work.
It's like, this is work. It's work to not work.
It's work so that in a year's time, I can go back to doing the actual work.
Yeah.
Is his way of looking at it, perhaps.
It's just, I can't say anything else other than it's dull, because you spend the entire time not doing something. Like, how do you write a story about that and make it interesting?
I don't know, right? Let this series tell you.
It doesn't. The only time that this thing is interesting is when we're actually confronted with the fact that he is a Yakuza, he is a hitman, and he's put in the situations that require him to act upon his prior knowledge, his expertise. And that happens so rarely. The rest of the time, he's just a dude. Like, he's just some fairly emotionally unavailable guy. And it doesn't really matter what he's doing. That's all you see in a situation, in the scene. He's getting a pet bird. Cool, he's just a guy getting a pet bird. And a guy with, like, very nondescript character features. Because he doesn't display emotion.
Oh, everyone in this series just looks like a dude or a girl.
Oh, yeah, like it's...
Which is perfectly fine, though. Like, I didn't have character blindness, but that's also because there's only realistically 5 characters, maybe.
Yes.
And I'm being generous there with 1 or 2 of them, but...
And if you're talking about art style now, it's like...
Has to be a word for this art style. It's annoying me that I'm blanking on it. The best thing is, it's kind of like rotoscoping in manga form, but... I don't know,
it's got like its really realistic style. Like, no one looks like an anime character. Like, no. Everyone just looks like a manga representation of an actual face.
Well, I did, and I don't know if this is real. I swear, I think I'm reading online, some people were saying, like, some of the backgrounds were, like, traces of photos and things like that, which I could believe, but...
I can believe that. That's...
Which is kind of why I'm leaning towards a rotoscoping.
It's not an uncommon thing nowadays to have, like, photos which are either just, like, some filter applied to it or the traced over.
Especially now in the Photoshop era where you can just take you can upload a picture, start doing things like wiping out the color in it, outlining it, and then boom, there you go. Or 3D modeling it for some people as well.
And, well, especially if these places that you're doing are actual places.
Yeah. Like, if you want to do, I want Tokyo Tower, so rather than draw it, I'm just going to take a photo.
Just take a photo and just grayscale it.
Yeah. But, it's because I'm not going to say the art is amazing or anything, but it for what the series is, it works. It matches the style of the series.
Yeah, it's definitely got a style. I personally quite like the art. Again, it's not what you would normally expect from a manga, an anime, but it is its style.
Yeah, it really does help with the tone of it, because with this kind of story, with this intentionally slow-paced, very serious story, serious in the no fun allowed way, not really like hard topic kind of way.
I mean, I would say it's mature at times without being like stupid. Like how some manga in the nowadays are like, oh, mature, you mean, oh, no, my tits are falling out. My No, it's just a more, I mean, obviously, considering what the premise is, but, you know, no, it actually straddles that line quite well of like just being adult about things.
And the art style is done in a very adult way, and not, again, not a pornographic way per se, but it's done in a way which is like, this is an art style that depicts people as adults, not as cartoon characters. And because of that, it really does lend some credence to the actual subject matter. When it's people in a room talking about killing people, it looks like they're killing actual people rather than cartoon characters. And so that helps the tone quite a lot. I can imagine that if this story was done with standard manga characters, like with the big eyes and the massive foreheads and the blue hair, it would be a very, very different tone to be set. Like, even with the exact same script, I don't think you could get the same kind of feel that it's going for. Which is why I really like the scenes where things happen, because the style really, really helps it out. Because it really does show some actual depth to what's going on, because of the usage of the more realistic faces and the facial expressions. And even when some things are a little bit sillier, with like him doing some Olympic high jumps and stuff like that, because it's like a realistic style to the facial expressions and body shape and stuff, because of that, it adds some credence to what's going on. It doesn't distract too much. It really does feel more real in those moments, and like when it pulls a gun out and you can see all the details on the gun, it feels more real in those moments. Basically what I'm saying is a realistic style makes it feel more real, which is, you know, shock horror. But it does help.
I get that. Like, I feel if you were to try and, to build on the point you said earlier, if you were to try and do this in traditional manga style, like a more usual style, you'd have to go down, like, you'd have to lean a lot more on the comedy for the absurdity of it all. You'd have to go down the route of, and I hate that I'm making this comparison because I hate the series, and now I'm blanking on its name, Dodoro-chan, the one with the angel with a giant fucking mallet.
Dokoro-chan,
where the whole point is it's the absurdity of it's happy-go-lucky anime style, but also she's brutally bludgeoning everyone to death with this massive spiked mallet.
Yeah, like, I know in some series that kind of juxtaposition is the joke, and that's the point. I think that keeping this just very serious in its mood the whole way through is the best way you could tell this story. Like, I think they absolutely nailed it with this one. And I'm thinking about all these other mobster movies I've seen back then, and they always keep up the same sort of vibe the whole way through. The vibe of, we're king of the world, but anything could go wrong at any moment. And they're able to maintain that vibe all the way through. And as a result of that, when things do go wrong, you're like, yeah, that makes sense, even though they were on top of the world not 20 minutes ago.
Oh man, are we calling this the Godfather of manga? I've never seen the Godfather, so you'll have to help me out.
Kind of. Not exactly. I'm more thinking of Goodfellas in this regard, which I'm aware is another movie you haven't seen.
How dare you? That's accurate.
But like in that movie, there it's a constant like upward momentum. And then all of a sudden, one thing trips and it all goes wrong. And this very sort of surprisingly jovial upward turn just starts to plummet. And everything starts to go wrong. And you get the feel that that could happen any minute in this one as well. Like, it allows you to trust you enough that this guy is a god, but he is one mistake away from everything going wrong. And he lives a life on that edge. And the art style and the tone and the writing in those scenes, it really does aid towards that feeling of, at any minute, this could go wrong. Probably won't, but it could. And that is a thing that I will absolutely credit this manga with. It is excellent at setting that tone when it wants to. And I will stress that last part, when it wants to.
It's, and this touches a little bit into what I've written for my conclusion notes, but we're getting near that part. It's awkward because it's very well built to tell the type of story that it's trying to tell. Like everything from the pacing, the art, the characters, everything builds very much for, so it's a great representation of the story it wants to tell. It's just whether you care about the story it wants to tell that's the issue.
It really wants to tell two stories, is the thing. It really wants to tell the story of this hitman who's trying to lay low but keeps getting dragged back in. And it also wants to tell a story of a dude who does things. And those things are just everyday slice of life, just boring shit. And the two don't mesh particularly well at all. Like, it's very jarring to go from one to the other, even though it's actually very well written. Like, you can see how they got there. It's just, there seems to be a lot of build-up that feels very, very disconnected. So when you get there, it just, okay, I guess we're doing this now. I don't think it gels well at all, even though it is weirdly well written. I don't know how they did that.
So I think part of it comes down to, it's very much a slow burn in a way. Like, we've done two volumes and it's 22 volumes overall, I think, for this first series.
For the Fable, yeah.
So in some ways, a lot of this is kind of setting stuff up. Like that first volume in particular, obviously, is kind of establishing your initial cast. It's sort of giving you hints at what's going to go on. Sort of this idea of they're trying to lay low, they're trying to stay out of the hitman life, the Yakuza lifestyle kind of thing, but stuff's dragging them into it even though they don't necessarily want to. And it's kind of them trying to manage that with this idea they've got to lay low for a while, they've got to have a normal life, they've got to go out, get a part-time job or get a parrot or a hamster or whatever and look after it. It's them trying to manage all of that at the same time, and that doesn't necessarily come across particularly well at the moment because it's still kind of setting it up.
I was going to say, there's no real management because it's not like, oh, I've got a parrot, now I need to feed it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I can't go out murdering tonight, I've got to go feed the parrot kind of thing. No, it's...
Sorry, it's guys, I'm booked in for the weekly Shogi club. Yeah. So.
The idea is more like, it's something he's got to ground him moving forward, potentially. And it's how does he adjust to it and things, I suppose, but...
Just shut him in a room with a jackal box set, and, you know, that'll be him done for the year. Just...
Yeah. Man likes jackal.
He does.
Man does like jackal.
I'm assuming there'll be a payoff as that in the... Like, you'll probably meet jackal at some point.
No, I think very much the opposite. I think that it will have no payoff. It'll just be some random character.
It'll just be his quirk, yeah.
And it's got no point. It's just a thing. And it's meant to be weirdly unsettling because of how funny he finds it and how dangerous this man is. And that's it.
Man needs a way to relax. And
I think it's more just like how if someone just said, oh yeah, my absolute favourite comedian is some third-rate comedian.
My favourite comedian is Bazekra.
How dare you call me third-rate? I'm at least fifth.
but it's that kind of idea where everyone's like, I mean, all right, you're allowed to have a favourite comedian, it can be whoever you want, but really? That's what you're going with? Not
be
you
like
know.
If you came up to me and said, my favourite Pokemon is Klefki, and I'd be like, you fucking what?
Oh, you just started like 10 fires.
Exactly.
it's just like, yeah, you're allowed that opinion, but that's a weird choice.
Like, all right, more power to you, I guess. What are you going to do, argue with the Terminator?
But again, it's not even necessarily the fact that he's a hitman in this instance. It's just like,
no.
That's just an odd choice.
Much like many scenes of this manga, he's just a guy in those moments. It's,
yeah.
He's just a guy who sleeps naked in his bath.
Yeah, he does that.
I mean, I get it.
That is, again, part of showing you how he's struggling to adjust, though, isn't it? He's like, no, I'm not going to sleep in the bed. That's not safe. I'm going to sleep in the bathtub naked because that's more secure.
But why naked, though? Like, sleeping
because
naked, it's fine, but...
Can't get strangled, I guess, by clothes.
There are reasons to work in the nude if you're a hitman, I guess, but you know,
I feel you want to be wearing more clothes because you'd be dropping skin everywhere.
Oh man, this is where
In his home, I feel, of all places.
Yes. No. When you're at home, yes. When you're on a job, look, I'm not a hitman, as far as you know.
You don't work out nude on other people's workout gear, Phil. God, what a weirdo. And presumably sat nude in his car, presumably. God,
I hope he wiped it down after.
All I'm saying is, I go to a
If you're about gym. To say you go to a gym, that's a lie.
Yeah, question mark, asterisk. I've been to a gym in my life.
I went to a gym.
I too have been to a gym, and look where it got me.
All I'm saying is...
That's because you went to Uncle Jim.
All I'm saying is if I walked in there naked, I would get kicked out very fast. If I owned the place, it'd be a private gym, in which case, yeah, fucking... You want to work out naked, do it, I guess, but also...
I'm Googling.
Be careful.
We're getting back to that whole discussion we had once of like, would you walk around this house naked after we read whatever the fucking series it was? Couple of Cuckoos, I think?
Yes.
Where he went around the house naked, yeah.
Yes. But again, the difference is, I'm not a professional hitman that you know of.
No, no.
So,
imagine if this was where it came out.
This is where
I've been fooling you for years. Oh. If only we didn't review that one Yakuza manga.
I'm actually great at Super Mario Sunshine.
But the point is, like, yeah, you're not... If you're naked, you're more likely to drop hair and skin and, you know, just generally DNA identifiable stuff.
But you'll also be wearing less DNA identifiable stuff. You won't be able to be tracked as easily. Or I love it. Something. Yeah, it's pros and cons. And again, I'm not a professional hitman, so what is my opinion on this matter?
Y'all need to clearly watch the show Dexter. They show you how to do it.
They do omit certain bits, but like I could go onto Netflix and watch a lot of these like how to be a serial killer series and be like, nah. Funnily enough, they omit bits so you don't just train people to do
it. Well, he explicitly wears a particular type of fabric when doing murder. So there you go.
I was thinking Burn Notice myself.
I haven't seen Burn Notice. Is it good?
Burn Notice is right. Good. And I need to
watch Bruce Campbell in it.
Oh, well, it does. That.
It's on my list of stuff I need to get back to.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Along
how
with
much
about
I saw of that,
but... 10 trillion other series.
I mean, in some ways, that is. Kind of similar to this in a way. Former hitman, though he's trying to.
As in his case, it's more that he got
burned.
As
the term is basically, everyone says no, you are no longer a hitman because reasons.
It's not like he's on retirement and isn't trying to. He's trying to live a normal.
No, he's very much trying to get back in, get the burn notice rescinded.
Yeah,
you just said the word burn notice so many times it lost any kind of meaning.
In the context of the show, a burn notice is essentially a notice that's sent out in the hitman industry to basically say, we have burned this person, they are no longer a professional hitman.
In terms you'll understand, Mike, here's the black card from Claymore.
So it comes up once and is never mentioned again.
Yeah, the title of the show.
Will Naughty Jim work for you?
I feel at this point, I feel when we're talking about naughty gyms and burn notices, we maybe run out of things to say about this series. Is there anything else anyone wants to discuss about The Fable?
I have nothing more to say about this, no. We can move on.
Then move on, we shall, to the usual conclusion end of the show, where we ask me and Mike whether we would read more, whether we would buy the official release from Kodansha, or whether we would watch either of the adaptations. Remember, as I said, it's got two live-action movies as well that you can watch on Netflix. Or, of course, the anime, which will be airing on Disney Plus now, I think in a week-ish when this episode comes out. So, April 7th. There you go. It's the point you need to know. And then, of course, Phil, who has read more of this, whether he would buy it, whether he would watch live-action or anime, and whether he would recommend this. I'll go first. Me. I appreciate this. I think it's well crafted. I think it's well built for what it's trying to do. It's fine. The slow burn pacing works for it. I think that, like, for example, the way they're handling Misaki and that she's barely come up in what we've done, but I think that's the right way of handling that character rather than trying to front end everything. I think the development of Fable and Ebihara's relationship is handled well over the course of, like, the back half of Volume 1, most of Volume 2. Like, this slow kind of transition from initial distrust to now friendship feels too strong for what they have, but, you know, acceptance of each other, kind of camaraderie now, I guess. The visuals, we went into a lot of depth on, and they perfectly match the style of what the story and the series is trying to tell. They both allow it to do kind of its action moments, its more down-to-earth grounded moments. They allow it to have kind of its mature essence without that feeling out of touch or anything. And it's well drawn enough that you can have these kind of like wordless scenes and understand completely what's going on. It's not like some other ones where I think, I want to say Remonster had a bunch of wordless scenes where you just had no fucking idea what was happening because it was so messy. No, with this, you understand what's happening, even if no one is saying anything. It's not my personal favorite style of art. Like, I'm not a huge, again, I've used the term rotoscoping, which isn't the right term for it. I'm not a huge fan of that type of art. But again, if it works for the story you're trying to tell, more power to you. I think most of the characters are fine. Yoko's a bit of an exception because all we've really seen out of her at the moment is cliche female with cliche female desires. But like, I have Fable is all right. Ebihara is all right. The minion is the minion, but you know, they all serve their role fine. And again, Fable and Ebihara are starting to have their development a little bit. And some of the comedy works for me as well. Like, I like the guy getting bitten in the junk by a parrot, Sumi. I thought the date between the female character Yoko and Takahashi and the minion was well done, had plenty of comedic moments. It's just so mundane, which I get, it's a slice of life. But I mean, to go back to the comparison we made way at the start of the episode, Way of the House Husband does pretty much everything better except narrative. And that's because Way of the House Husband doesn't really have a narrative. So this one is better than it in that regard, but I prefer the art of Way of the House Husband. I prefer the characters of Way of the House Husband. And I mean, critically, considering what it is, I prefer the comedy of Way of the House Husband. So I would personally always probably go for that over this. But if you enjoy Fable, great. More power to you. And I get it. I think it's very well constructed and very well realized for the type of story it's telling. My issues with it aren't like, oh no, I feel that it's let down in the art or that it's let down in the writing. I just find it dull.
Perhaps just a bit too slow a burn.
I don't even know that because I've got no issue with slow burn. There's nothing. I struggle to find anything to latch onto that would make me go, yes, I need to stick around with this, especially when, and again, admittedly, Way of the House Husband came out, like, what, 15-ish years later, maybe? In a world where I've read Way of the House Husband, it's hard to get invested in this as much, even if they aren't necessarily going for the exact same thing. So no, I wouldn't read more. I wouldn't buy more, partly because of what I've said before, and also because of the type of purchaser I am. I like to buy my physical single volumes, and this is Kodansha doing anything but physical single volumes. Thanks, guys. So won't be doing that. In terms of watching it, it's tricky to say, especially because it would depend, obviously, on how long the anime is going to be, and we don't know that yet. Like, are they going to try and do the whole thing in 13 episodes, in 26 episodes? Because potentially that would fix some of the pacing issue. I say issue. I don't think it's got pacing issues, but it would have to do something. It would have to speed up and make it a bit more snappy.
I think that start in particular, you could cut down a bit.
Yeah, like you could just get rid of the kickboxing guy completely. But even though, again, I don't have an issue with that stuff. I just, if you were to streamline it, that would be one of the first things you cut in these two volumes. But maybe it'll be well realized. I'm personally probably not going to watch it. The most likely thing I might do, and again, this is only like if I had spare time, and I mean, we talked about how I have got a million shows on my watch list, so it's unlikely. Maybe I'd watch the live action movies just because that then is going to boil it all down into, I mean, I've not checked, but presumably 1.5 to 2.5 hours. So that would be like really kind of hyper condensing it down. And then if I was engaged in what happens later on in those, then maybe that would invest me to go back into the anime or back into the manga from there. But it's not near the top of my list. I'm much more likely, if I was to go like, I want to buy a series like this, I'm far more likely to go out and buy the next one in Way of the House Husband than I am to go seek out the Fable. But if you're into this, more power to you. I don't think it's not one where I would ever judge you for reading or liking this, because I completely get it. It is very well made. It's just not for me. And on that note, we will go to Phil. Would you buy this from Kodansha? Would you watch anime on Disney Plus or the movies on Netflix? And would you recommend this, or would you recommend something else like We're the House Husband or something else entirely?
I'm probably going to check out the anime. At the very least, I think it's worth giving it a few episodes to see what I think, see how it does. I'm tempted to check out at least the first film, see what that's like. I feel like I've read the films aren't particularly good in that they perhaps just condense a bit too much stuff in a way. But I could potentially see myself at least trying the first one, seeing what I think. Because I do think it could make a good live-action adaptation. And I am intrigued to see how the anime does, just because, say, in general, I like the art of this, I like the writing, the characters. I think it's generally very well put together, and I'd be interested to see how the anime does with it. I don't think it's a series I would particularly buy. I'm not that invested in it, because it's just generally not the type of series I'm personally super into. But it was interesting enough for me that I've read more of it and enjoyed it at the very least. In terms of recommendations, if someone was like, oh, I'm wanting something Yakuza-y, Hitman-y, that kind of thing, I'd be like, yeah, maybe check out The Fable. Someone was saying they wanted something a bit more comedic, I probably would point them towards Way of the House Husband. But in general, I think I would always recommend this over that, just because, and I think we talked about this in the episode we did on Way of the House Husband, while we all thought that was a good series and is definitely worth checking out, I think for me and Mike, at least, the problem was it had its one joke, and that's all it seemed to have in what we read. And that was that. Whereas this, they do have that ongoing narrative to keep you engaged, to keep you wanting to read more beyond volume 2. Whereas Way of the House Husband, it feels more like just pick up a random volume or two and you've probably got the gist of most of the volumes. So I would probably always recommend this over that, unless you're specifically wanting that comedy angle.
Okay, so there you have it. But now, the real mystery of the show. Mike, would you read more of this? Would you buy it from Kodansha? And would you watch it live action or anime? Take it away.
Okay, so I think I've made it fairly clear throughout this episode that I want to like this. I want to enjoy this, because if I was ever going to enjoy a slice of life manga, it would be this. And there is so much about it I do like. I genuinely love the tone it sets, aided by the art style. And in those two parts where something happens, it is a genuinely good read. That first chapter, very good. I had a little cry when I found out it was a slice of life right after, as predicted. But it was, you know, fine. There was still potential there. And at the end, when they're juxtaposing these two scenes against each other, with the date on one side and the weird twisted date of Fable having to prove himself, essentially, and that was really good. And those scenes are really good because of the context that they've set up, and they take time to set up, and all of that's really good stuff. If the entire manga was like that, I would genuinely love this. But between that, there is just two volumes of nothing. Absolutely nothing. Things that you could just trim out entirely. You just mentioned there the random kickboxer guy who turns up way too many times. Completely useless character. Completely useless. Not necessary. All of the, oh, we're gonna trick him with this one, hijinks. Completely pointless. Like, we know who this guy is, they know who this guy is, why are we testing it? I don't get it. I don't know why. It's just boring. And then on top of all that, he just does a bunch of random normal people shit. They don't use the hook at all, and I understand that he's trying to blend in, but it's like, this is just a dude with no character traits at this point. Like, his one character trait is that he's dispassionate and he's a hitman. A really good hitman. Those are his character points. And so if you play into that, not in so much as a comedy way, like the way the house husband does, but like do a more serious slice of life thing with that, there is such potential for a story there. And I really think that's the story they were trying to tell. But because there's just nothing there, like they didn't know how to connect the stories at all. So it really feels like you're reading two stories with the exact same cast. I don't find this interesting. It was really a case of, I was finding it hard to pay attention because it was just like, cool, nothing happens in this chapter either. And that is the majority of it. Like, between, there's like, first chapter, genuinely very good. Chapters 17, 18, 19, genuinely very good. Everything between that, 2 to 16, boring. So boring. There's like, maybe a couple of sparks of, that's a chuckle. But that does not carry a story for like 14 chapters. To have so little happen in two volumes, but still have like such potential is galling. It's gutting that it's like, there's so much potential here and it's just squandered by mediocrity. Like vast oceans of mediocrity between the scenes. And it's just, ugh. I could not possibly imagine reading something with that kind of pacing. Phil calls it a slow burn. I call it a no burn for the vast majority. And then suddenly remembering that, oh shit, yeah, we were telling a story. I forgot about that. Let's get back to that for a minute. And they just forget about it again. I can only imagine what... There's 22 volumes with this. I could not read another 20 volumes. Well, sorry, no, I couldn't read like what would be equivalent of 19 volumes of nothing and one equivalent volume of something happening. Something which is probably very well written, very well drawn, great tone and setting and stylization and direction. Probably amazing, but I cannot sift through effectively 19 volumes of nothing to get to it. And that is assuming the rest of it is written like this. The way this is written, I have zero desire to read this. I have zero desire to watch any kind of adaptation of this. And I cannot commit my very limited funds to the potential for that amount of nothing to happen. So no, I would not be buying this either. This is a rare one for me where I'm so annoyed at it because it could have been better. I do not recommend this. I recommend that you, at most, you skim it until you see something good happening and then you read it. But that's no way to read something. That's just, don't bother. Don't bother. It's not worth it. It's so tiring because, ugh, mediocre. Mediocrity at its finest. The average is very much dragged down from those scenes, which are actually genuinely very good. Sad.
So there you have our takes on one of Mao's top 150 manga. Award winning, 20 million selling. Yeah.
I have to believe that all of the top ratings come from those very genuinely, very powerful, very good scenes. And then... people just forget the rest.
I mean, I don't know what happens in the other 20, but for all we know, the 20 volumes is at the quality of these final three chapters, but what you envision the quality of these final three chapters, Mike. So
entirely possible, but I have no inclination to do that, to read that and find out, because what we got so far was just, oi.
Oh, sure. Like, it ties back to the whole debate of like, is two volumes enough to judge? Yes. Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Yes. If nothing happens in two volumes, why do you think anything will happen in the rest of the other 20?
Oh, dear. So, but yeah, so there you have it. But hey, again, if you want to check it out for yourself, obviously the anime does start airing on Disney Plus April 7th. But you know what's airing right now?
What's airing
right now? Twitch.tv/Berserkra.
Oh God, potentially at the time that you're listening to this, because I stream all the time. You can find me at twitch.tv/Berserkra, BERSEKRER, for a variety of speedrunning and non-speedrunning content of video games and the like. The time recording this, I'm playing Super Mario Sunshine, so there'll be VODs of that, but I've almost presumably finished it by now.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Doubt.
Yeah.
Nah, he should get through it in a stream or two.
Doubt. We'll see.
And yep, tune in for more of my hot takes and comedy stylings and video gaming.
General ineptitude and inability to show up on time.
No. It's fun, I promise.
And now, Phil, it's our part of the show where we can talk about what's airing this season. And if there's anything we want to shout out, because boy, if you like sequels, this is the season for you.
Now, I don't remember if we've announced this before.
Oh, baby.
But the season, there is also, and you did mention it in this episode as well, there is also Re:Monster airing this season.
Ew.
It got an anime adaptation because we covered it on this show.
Oh, yeah, is how that works.
That's how that works.
Explicitly, yes.
Superpower lays dormant for a while, but it comes back.
It does. Along with half the shows this season, spearheaded, of course, the return of Konosuba for its third season, the Superior Isekai.
For an even better Isekai, Slime Season 3 is also this season.
Yeah, no. Konosuba is more popular on this chart, so, you know, people have spoken.
Yeah, I'm not naive enough to say Konosuba isn't bigger than Slime.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of isekais, of which some of which I recognize the titles to, and some of which I'm like, yep, sure.
There are some of the big hitter isekais this season.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's a stacked season because you've got the return of Demon Slayer. Obviously, that was massive. My Hero Academia is back for its seventh season.
I can't think what the English fucking title is. Spice and Wolf. That's it.
Spice and Wolf is getting its. I don't think it's. Because it's not. It's not the sequel. It's not Wolf and Parchment. I think. Yeah. It's like a reboot.
I think it's a reboot of the original.
Yep. Day-Tay Live somehow shits out another season, which genuinely amazes me that people give a shit about that. But hey, here it's back. Eurocamp's back. Regular at Magic High School's back. Sound Euphonium's back, which means Kyo Annie is back. Yeah. So happy that they were able to recover and hopefully make another. Absolute classic in that.
Well, you got Blue Archive for your gacha tie-in.
Yeah, Blue Archive around there. And I mean, one day I'll get around to playing that game. Gartender, Bartender is back again. Is back for a new season.
A new Code Geass film / OVA by the looks of it.
Code Geass never dies. And Black Butler, that was it. Black Butler is making its yet another season of it. So a lot to look for. Anything else you want to share on this though? Because I know I'm not always far pay with what's hot in the scene.
Something called The Fable seems to be airing.
Called The Fable. Yeah, weird. We should cover that one episode.
No, it looks terrible.
I mean, a lot of the stuff I recognize is isekais or sequels.
What, Phil? Focusing on isekai?
See, like, other big isekais, you got Jobless Reincarnation in English, Mushoku Tensei. That's getting its season 2, part 2. There's Duke of Death season 3. I've still not seen the first two seasons, but the manga of that was good. We may cover that at some point.
Oh, fuck, I've missed Kaiju number 8. I'm an idiot. Right, yeah, that's also airing. You know, that massive series, Sean. Okay.
Oh, yeah, Sean, how could you?
Yeah. I think we've covered the big ones.
Yeah, as I say, if you want sequels, fuck tons of them.
This is it. Just about has a 2 or a 3 or a 7.
Or a 7.
Or a 5.
But we don't talk about Day-Tay Live. I'm just pretending that one isn't. Did you ever watch any of Day-Tay Live, just to check? I don't know if that's something one you're familiar with. Good, don't.
I'm going to say no.
Remain blissfully unaware of it. It's for the best.
Was Day-Tay Live the
Shit,
one...
yes.
Was Day-Tay Live the one where culture was banned? No,
culture
that was AKB.
Culture was... How? Yeah. What?
Don't ask, Mike. Don't ask.
That's just a confusing thing to say.
That was AKB48. I remember.
That was cool.
Right. I'm saying nothing of the group themselves. That was the stupidest initial phrase. That's a fun way to do an Island anime.
What if it's an Island anime where entertainment's banned?
Cool. Yeah. And was it entertainment or was it culture?
One of them. It was like some very broad kind of, you can't make people happy, but we're going to do it anyway.
We were like,
it's a guy who can't party up.
We were like, but the dad's reading the news. Surely that's illegal. Because what if he's getting enjoyment out of it?
So, yeah, it was. No, Dead Alive, if I remember correctly, it's shit world gone, you know, where the guy has to be in romantic relationships with these, essentially, they're not like Cthulhu for Dagon, because that's an entirely different series, but it's kind of like, if there's heart emotional unrest with these girls, then the planet's fucked. So, so he has to, you know.
No, I do not think I've seen. I've definitely heard the name Date Alive.
Yeah, I remember covering it back when I did my first episode impressions, and that was a decade ago. So somehow it shits out another series, but yeah, don't worry, we'll never cover it on this show, touch wood. So,
I mean, I don't read it, so unlikely.
Unlikely indeed. But anyway, yeah, if you want to talk shit about anime with us, then at Slazer King for me, at Fanaxkian for Phil, and we'll both just be like, go watch Free Man. So you can follow the podcast as a whole at Trash Manga Cast on Twitter, at Trash Manga Friends elsewhere. The card link in our show notes will link you to all the various socials and all the podcast platforms we're on, as well as to the socials of me, Phil, and Mike. So you can get on, you can follow us, you can subscribe to the show on whatever podcast service you use. But as quickly as one trash series is taken care of, 50 more nuisances fill the void, chief among those being this old April Fool's Day troublemaker rearing its ugly head again. Yes, it's nearly time for our annual vacation away from manga to attack an entirely new media. So look forward to that special episode dropping, as always, 8 a.m. on April 1st. With another regular episode also loaded into the chamber for in a fortnight's time. So take care, rest up, and we'll see you in April. Bye-bye!